Chapter 14. Zara. The morning comes, as it has the past several weeks, abruptly, with the faint memory of horrific nightmares. Blinking away my sleepiness, I blearily make my way to the door to find the annoyingly chipper guard who had knocked on my door just moments before. "We're heading out soon, Magus," the man says, peeking through the door and obviously trying to get a glimpse of me in my shift. "Breakfast is being served downstairs." I slam the door on his bulbous face without even replying. Yawning, I proceed to the nightstand to wash my face, clean my teeth, and brush my hair, then make my way over to my saddlebags, pulling out a fresh set of robes and getting dressed. Filtered sunlight shines through the shutters on the room's only window, lighting my way as I prepare to head downstairs. "I miss my quarters at the Conclave," I think longingly, turning my back on the lumpy bed on the far side of the room. I should have appreciated my mattress more when I was there. Gathering my things, my bags only carrying a fraction of what I'm accustomed to, I push open the door and make my way to the common room. There I find Owen, Talon, Elias, and the others already eating, huddling around several tables as they devour eggs and fried potatoes. I drop my bags and sit down beside Owen, irritated that I'm once again the last person ready to depart. As if on cue, a server rushes over to my position and places a large plate of food in front of me. "Thank you," I mumble, reaching forward and pouring myself a cup of cold milk.
"You look lively this morning," Talon says around a mouthful of eggs. "Did you get the beauty rest you required, Magus?"
"Shut it, Talon," Owen growls, but I take the taunt in stride.
"I was just enjoying my time away from you," I reply, taking a sip from the cup. "I only wish it had been a little longer." Talon grins, still chewing with his mouth open. "Insufferable git," I think, picking up my fork and spearing a few potatoes. "He certainly makes for an interesting traveling companion." Stabbing at my food, I heave a sigh. "I actually had difficulty sleeping last night. I had terrible dreams." The two of them grow quiet, their faces becoming troubled. "What?" I ask, the fork halfway to my lips. Talon wipes his lips with the back of his hand, then clears his throat.
"I had a nightmare last night, too. In fact, I've been having a lot of them over the last few weeks."
He shivers visibly.
"I thought I was the only one."
I give him a flat look.
"Oh, come now, Talon. You shouldn't poke fun. I'm being serious."
"So am I," he protests, his stupid little smirk absent for once.
"I've been having nightmares as well," Owen says more softly. "Ever since I first saw the Dark Hound in the Emberwood."
All of us fall silent, an ominous feeling settling over the table. After a moment, Talon picks up his cup and shrugs.
"It's probably nothing," he replies with an uneasy chuckle. "We've been through a lot, us three. Probably just having an effect on our minds."
Owen and I nod and turn back to our food, and the conversation remains dead for a time. I suddenly feel less hungry than before. While prodding disinterestedly at my meal, I find myself glancing around the common room, taking stock of those around us. Rallos sits with a group of the king's soldiers, regaling them about a rebellion or something he had helped quell years ago. The men listen to him with varying levels of disinterest. The innkeeper stands behind the bar, speaking quietly with a barmaid and pointing at several spots on the floor. As always, Elias sits by himself at one of the tables, eating his food with his back against the far wall. He chews with an almost mechanical efficiency, his eyes seeming to look everywhere and nowhere at once, his brow a hard line across his forehead. Seeing him brings back memories of our whispered conversation from last night.
"I need to speak to Owen. Explain things. I need to make him understand.
What did he mean by that? What possible reason could he have for being both a ranger and a nightingale? I'm still unsure about how I feel about talking to him behind Owen's back. A part of me is appalled by the double life Elias has led, but the greater part of me understands how important it is for the two of them to reconcile their differences, especially considering the true threat we now face. Asmodeus, I think to myself, suppressing a shiver. It was one thing thinking that the demons were an unorganized mob trying to get inside the Ark. It is quite another facing the threat of the Prince of Darkness himself. To think that such a creature, the one who first led the invasion against our world, is still directing them and guiding the movements of the Harbingers makes our human squabbles seem petty indeed. My food grows cold as I dwell upon these thoughts, my appetite completely leaving me. Everyone else soon finishes their breakfast. They begin preparing our group for departure, moving their packs outside and saddling the horses. Through the open door I can see that it is a gray day outside, the mountains cold and blanketed in fog. At least it isn't snowing yet, I think glumly. That's got to count for something. I push my plate aside and go to join the others, dragging my saddlebags along behind me. Painting on a pleasant face, I'm determined to forget about nightmares and demon princes so that I can focus on lifting Owen's spirits. He seems to have fallen back into his brooding, his eyes distant, and his expression troubled. If anything is going to bring him out of this malaise, it's going to be his friends, me and the insufferable Git. The frigid air fills my lungs as I step outside, stinging my throat and immediately chilling me to the very core. I pull up my hood to give me some semblance of warmth, but it does little good. Cheeks already burning, I make my way over to the stables, where Owen is waiting for me, his bow slung over his shoulder. He wordlessly helps me ready my horse, and then together we mount up, riding out onto the cobbles of the town square to join with the others. Our group is smaller now than when we had left Tarsus. The extra horses, those which had not been killed by the Blackwings, are left behind, given to stablemen to look after while we're away. With Rollo's in the lead, we trot our horses to the heavily guarded northern gate, hooves clattering noisily as we go. The townsfolk watch as we depart, their faces drawn and somber. Although they don't know why we are heading into the mountains, they understand the dangers of taking the northern road. Only nightingales live in the Ironbacks, and by all accounts, they don't take kindly to outsiders trespassing in their domain, especially those loyal to the king. Progress slows considerably as we traverse the foothills. The way is much more difficult than down in the heartlands, where a single road led right to our destination over relatively flat ground. Here the path is narrow and rocky, with alternating switchbacks and steep, treacherous inclines. The mountains loom like silent guardians before us, with impassive stone faces that rise from the earth and disappear into the low-hanging clouds above. I can see snow on the heights of those mountains, not so far from where we now ride, and every so often I catch a glimpse of breathtaking waterfalls running from unseen glaciers and spilling from the tops of sheer cliffs. Ahead, the road disappears into a dense forest of pines, the trees sprouting from the ground at an angle and obscuring the uneven terrain. They're a different shade than those found in the Emberwood, a dusky evergreen rather than a vibrant emerald. Light, I think, as I stare in awe at the surrounding landscape. And I thought the towers of Tarsus made me feel small. Ahead, Elias has taken the lead, followed closely by Rollo's, the black-haired knight, who eyes the ranger warily, his hand never straying far from his sword. The other soldiers follow next,
their eyes darting around nervously as if anticipating an ambush, while Owen, Talon, and I take up the rear. For the most part, we ride in silence. Voices carry on the uneven slopes, and no one wants to risk an echo giving away our position. My eyes wander, eventually settling on Owen, who is riding nearby. He rides with his bow resting upon his lap, a bristling quiver of arrows slung on the horn of his saddle in front of him. Just like Elias, he looks ready to do battle, his expression cool as he searches for signs of danger. He doesn't appear nervous like the soldiers, but at ease with his surroundings, a quiet confidence in the way he carries himself, like a young wolf searching for prey. Something about that is captivating to me, though I can't determine exactly why. He's so different from all the other men I've ever known, I think, studying his features. Owen is the exact opposite of the scholarly type. His tan skin and rugged features bespeak time spent outdoors, and his calloused fingers and hard muscles suggest long hours spent working with his hands and fighting. Even the way he speaks, slow and thoughtful, yet unrefined, is appealing to me, making him both intriguing and infuriating to have a conversation with. He's certainly a fascinating individual. And those eyes.
"Do I have something on me?" he asks,
abruptly shaking me from my thoughts. I feel a blush creeping up my face and realize that I've been staring at him this whole time.
What?
No, I reply ineloquently, turning away and trying to hide my reddening cheeks. Sorry.
Are you sure?
He asks, bringing a self-conscious hand up to his face. Behind us, Talon quietly snickers.
I've never been this far north, I say in a rushed voice, changing the subject.
Reaching into one of my saddlebags, I retrieve my white, rabbit fur-lined gloves and pull them on.
It's very cold. Cold and mountainy. Mountainous?
Nice, Zara.
Yeah,
Owen agrees, giving me a sidelong glance.
It is cold and mountainous.
Talon snorts, and I shoot him a venomous glare.
I've never been this far north, either,
Owen continues, oblivious to our exchange. His eyes return to scanning our surroundings.
Only the most veteran rangers are sent here, and even then, they never travel far into the mountains. Too many rangers have been killed over the years.
He trails off, a gloom settling over him once more. I watch him for a moment, chewing on my lip, as I try to think of a way to pull him back into conversation.
It's like he's getting worse, I think, concerned.
The littlest things are setting him off and making him dejected. Clearing my throat, I bring my horse even closer to his.
There's a legend surrounding these mountains, you know?
Owen turns back to regard me, one of his eyebrows raised.
A legend?
Yes, I reply, motioning at the slopes ahead of us. It's said that long ago, before humans lived on Behalia, giants walked the land. They used to cultivate entire forests and sleep under the stars.
Children's stories, Talon says, but Owen shushes him, giving me an encouraging nod to go on. I continue.
These giants were among the first creations of the light. They were beings of stone and earth, with hearts of unquenchable living fire and bones of pure iron. They lived in peace and harmony, wandering the face of the world and leaving their mark wherever they went. I pause, trying hard to remember the legend. It has been a long time since I took the class on ancient mythology at the academy. Even though I'd gotten high marks, it had not been one of my favorites. Owen seems interested, though, and so I do my best to tell the story. As with all things, the peace could not last. Like men, the giants were imperfect beings, with thoughts and desires that sometimes led to strife.
I sit up in my saddle, the details coming back to me as the words fall more easily from my lips. The greatest of the giants was named Olma, and his soul became corrupted with visions of making himself the king of the whole world. He slew those who opposed him, murdering his brethren in an attempt to secure power, and soon the land was littered with giant bodies, their corpses forming mountain ranges all over the face of Bihalia. Owen listens with rapt attention, but a glance behind me reveals a skeptical Talon, who rolls his eyes in exaggerated fashion, no doubt to annoy me. Ignoring him, I continue with my story. At a time when all hope seemed lost, one giant named Vadra decided to resist Olma's tyranny. He left the arms of his wife and family, intent on stopping him before anyone else could be hurt. He was not the largest giant, nor was he the strongest, but his heart was greater than any who ever lived. Vadra challenged Olma to fight, and stood firm when the conqueror laughed at his boldness. "Can you not see how many giants I have killed?" Olma asked him, gesturing to the bodies of the slain. "My hands have crushed the heads of giants bigger than you, and my footsteps shake the foundations of the world." "I do not fear you," Vadra replied defiantly, "but you should fear me. Your reign of terror ends today." Again Olma scoffed, but he indulged the smaller giant, confident that he would come out victorious. Their fight was legendary, and it's said that even the sun hid its face for fear, shrouding the land in darkness. For a time, Vadra held his own against the destroyer, but he was no warrior. Every blow he struck was matched tenfold, cracking his stony flesh and snapping his iron bones in twain. Olma mocked him. "See, you cannot stand against me. All will bow down before me and fear." Strangely, Vadra smiled in the face of his own death. "I do not fear you, for the love of my kin is greater than your malice." Using the last of his strength, he reached inside of his own chest and pulled out his heart, which burned with an intensity greater than anything on the face of Bihalia. It blinded Olma and caused him to stumble, and when Vadra smashed his heart against the ground, the resulting explosion could be heard in all the lands round about. The fire consumed both giants, killing them instantly, and blasting an enormous crater that later became the basin upon which Tarsinium was settled. The bodies of Olma and Vadra were flung in opposite directions, the smaller creating the Southwall Mountains, and the larger creating the Ironback Mountains. Thus ended the terrible reign of Olma the Destroyer, and henceforth began the last golden age of the giants before the coming of man.
"So," said Talon, giving me a flat look, "you're telling me that right now we're riding on the corpse of some ancient giant?"
I shrug. "That's what the old writings say. It's a tale of self-sacrifice, of giving everything in pursuit of a worthy cause, such as defending those who cannot defend themselves." Owen is quiet for a moment before giving me an impressed look.
"That's quite the story, Zara. I've never heard that one before."
"It's nothing," I reply. "Just something I learned when I was in the academy."
"Do you think it's true?"
he asks, and for a moment I'm taken aback by his earnestness.
"Did Vadra truly sacrifice himself to save the giants?"
"Of course not," Talon interjects, chuckling derisively. "It's just an old folk tale, a myth, nothing more."
I lean in, ignoring Talon, as I hold Owen's fervent gaze. A quote from one of my professors comes to mind, and I find myself repeating it word for word. "All legends contain elements of truth. It's up to us to learn the lessons of the past and become heroes of our own time." Owen slowly nods, as if I had just said the most profound thing he's ever heard.
The trail abruptly narrows, forcing us to ride in a single file. As Owen pulls away, I can't help but notice that he sits a little straighter than he did before, the tension in his face vanishing as the dark cloud that's been following him seems to dissipate. Smiling to myself triumphantly, I softly click my tongue, urging my horse to move forward up the steep incline. We make our way to the end of the rugged foothills, the switchbacks leading up the face of one of the first and smallest of the mountains. After an hour or so of riding, we finally reach the top. Glancing over my shoulder, I see Ohmkirk far below, and beyond that, the sprawling plains of the heartlands stretch on for miles before disappearing into the fog. From this distance, I can no longer see the Pillar of Radiance or its beam of radiant magic as it shoots into the sky. I feel an odd sense of vertigo, and I have to turn away to avoid getting dizzy. Strange that even after living in a tower of all things, that these mountains can suddenly give me a fear of heights. The road, now little more than a rocky trail, leads into a canyon between two mountains. The crumbling walls of granite are wet-looking and interspersed with scraggly-like trees. Memories of being ambushed in the heart of the forest come rushing back as we approach the divide, and I find my heart beating faster in nervous anticipation. Fortunately, my fears prove unfounded as we travel through the mountain pass unhindered, though the way the wind gusts through the ravine makes me wish I had another layer of clothing. Coming out the other side, we find ourselves in a breathtaking mountain vale, a great misty valley beset on all sides by tall peaks and forested meadows. Streams and rivers run down from the snow caps above, cascading over the rocks in a way that reminds me of an idyllic painting. Elias leads us through the vale without pausing to allow us to gawk at the sight, though everyone besides Rallos and him looks awestruck by the grandeur of the Ironbacks.
11 hells, Talon mutters, watching an eagle soar above our heads. Now these are mountains. I'm half inclined to believe your crackpot story, Zara.
Aren't you from Yaren? Owen asks, tearing his gaze away from the veil.
The Southwall Mountains were practically in your backyard. The South Walls are nothing compared to these monsters, he says. It rarely snows there, and they're not half as tall.
I've always seen these mountains from a distance, I say, mostly to myself. My breath mists in front of my face like a cloud. Even when we visited Dagger's Point, we were just in the beginnings of the foothills. I never dreamed they would be this big up close. We continue, delving into the valley and back up the face of another mountain. Despite the altitude, the wildlife seems so abundant here, with deer grazing in the meadows and quick furry creatures darting throughout the trees as we go by. This place feels just as abundant as any of the kingdom's forests, perhaps even more so. Part of me wishes that I could sit and document the experience, but I know that words would fail to capture the raw natural beauty of this untouched landscape. The switchbacks take us even higher into the peaks, depositing us once more into another canyon. This time my uneasiness isn't so keen, though the continuing drop in temperature is enough to make my teeth chatter. By the time we make it to the next vale, the sun has already fallen out of sight, casting everything around us into shadow.
"We'll camp here for the night," Elias proclaims, taking us off the trail and into a clearing amidst the pines. "These mountains are dangerous at night, especially in the colder seasons. We'll need to get a fire going right away."
With that, we get to work, hitching up our horses and making camp. Several of the soldiers set about the task of gathering firewood, while others clear a space for us to sleep. Within a half hour, a cozy fire is crackling in a pit, brightening the clearing with the dancing light of its flames. As we have the past few nights,
except for our night in Ohmkirk. We eat our evening meal around the fire and prepare ourselves for bed. Unlike the mages I had traveled with before, this group travels light, without the use of tents or carriages. Owen and Talon lay their bedrolls in their customary positions beside mine, and Elias lies down on the far side of camp, his back resting against a tree. Fortunately, I brought a healthy assortment of blankets with me from the conclave, and I bundle myself up so much that only my nose and eyes are visible to the cold night air. Owen catches a glimpse of me, and I can see a bit of laughter in his eyes before I drift off. Within moments, I am asleep, tossing and turning as the usual nameless horrors torment my dreams. I awaken to Owen shaking me, his voice hushed but urgent in my ear.
"Sara," he whispers, "wake up. Something isn't right."
I blink, seeing the hazy light of dawn in the sky above me. My nose and cheeks feel like they've frozen overnight, but the rest of my body is relatively warm, thanks to my blankets and proximity to the fire. Pushing myself to a sitting position, I glance around, trying to rouse myself and take stock of the situation. Owen crouches beside me, his posture tense like a taut bowstring. Around us, most of the guards are still asleep, snoring softly beside the glowing coals in the fire. It takes me a moment, but I soon realize what Owen is talking about. The guard who was supposed to be keeping watch over us has disappeared. That, and Elias is gone, too.
"Light," I hiss, my mind snapping into sharp focus.
"Where's Elias?" Owen shakes his head.
"I don't know, but we aren't alone here. Someone's out there, watching us."
I gaze around the still, dark mountain vale, but of course I don't see anything out of the ordinary. "He must have the eyes of a hawk," I think, dabbing my running nose with the edge of my sleeve. He shakes Talon awake and whispers into his ear. Cursing quietly, the apprentice reaches for his short swords. The three of us huddle together, quietly conferring about what we should do.
"We need to have a look around," Owen suggests, pulling out his hatchet. "I'm not sure, but I think we still have the element of surprise. If we hurry, we can—"
His voice cuts off as Elias steps out of the tree line, carrying a bow with an arrow knocked to the string. Behind him, I can see many dark shapes materializing from the foliage, their black cloaks hooded and their weapons drawn. As the figures draw near, I notice the silvery bird embroidered on their breasts, an all-too-familiar symbol that I recognize immediately.
"Nightingales!"
I breathe, panic welling up inside of me. I reach up and grasp my talisman, pulling in source energy and preparing to cast a spell.
"11 hells!"
Talon curses, loud enough to wake the others.
"There's so many of them! I don't think we can take them all, Owen."
Several of the soldiers cry out and groggily scramble for their weapons as the dozens of black-cloaked men bear down on us.
"Put down your arms," Elias commands,
his voice as cool and confident as ever.
"You're now in the custody of the Nightingales. They will be taking command of this expedition from here on out."